Howdy, y'all. You're dialed into the Oklahoma Today podcast, bringing you all the best in Oklahoma for another week. April 19th is a very special, very solemn day for Oklahomans, and we will be talking with Oklahoma City National Memorial and Museum Executive Director Kerry Watkins about the 26th anniversary of the terrorist attack on Oklahoma City and some new exhibits going into the museum this week. But before we talk to Kerry, we have got our question of the week. We asked you, what is the best song that has Oklahoma in the lyrics or title? Let's start off with Editor-in-Chief Nathan Gunner.
There are a lot. This is tough. And so I wanted to say Oklahoma. I wanted to say Okie from Muskogee. That's way up there for me. I wanted to say Oklahoma, the state song. I wanted to say Boomer Sooner, because Boomer Sooner. There's a lot. Then there's a whole bunch of local artists who've done amazing things, like Bo Jennings has amazing Oklahoma music. John Fulbright, Casey Clifford, Parker Millsap, all these great people that write songs about about life in Oklahoma. And so this was a really tough one. But I got to go with Oklahoma Hills by Woody Guthrie as the number one choice for me. And I'm in good company because I noticed that on Facebook our executive director, Jerry Winchester, said the same thing. So I'm going to go with the boss man, our tourism executive director, but also I got to go with Woody Guthrie because he's just the guy. And Oklahoma Hills, it's a great song. It's an amazing song.
We're convinced.
Here's another thing about it.
Managing editor, Carly Ibarra.
Whereas Nathan covered the various songs that include Oklahoma, all the different artists, I'm just going to say Oklahoma because I love it so much. And I actually just watched the musical for the first time about 6 months ago. I mean, whenever I was, I've gone to school in Oklahoma my whole life, so I'm sure we watched it in bits and pieces in class at some point, but that's the first time I'd ever sat down and watched the whole thing.
Oh, wow. I remember we went to Discoveryland when I was like 14, and you could always watch Oklahoma there. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know all the state songs, but I'm pretty sure Oklahoma is a top tier state song.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, no, it is the state song of all state songs.
And we sing it all the time because that's the only way we know how to spell the name of the state.
Every time we're fact-checking, I will say for our reader's delectation, something you may not know is that literally every time the word Oklahoma appears in this magazine, it's been spell checked by one of us, and I always do it by singing the song.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll also say this is how I know that this is the best state song of all state songs. It's because I was in Ireland one time and a drunk guy came up to me and asked me if I was American, and I said yes, and he said, where are you from? And I said, Oklahoma. And he drunkenly sang that whole song as he stumbled away down the street. This is in no way me saying that all Irish people are drunks. It was just a very late night in a very hip part of town where lots of people were drinking. And he stumbled away singing the Oklahoma State song. So that's how I know that it is the number one state song of all state songs.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oklahoma transplant and photo editor Megan Rossman.
Slow Night, So Long by Kings of Leon is the one that I can think of.
That's a good one.
There are other ones, but it's
the one I can think of.
Well, it's the one I can think of, and I don't like a lot of the other ones that Oklahoma.
Yeah. Kings of Leon are great.
Yeah.
They had some good albums.
Yeah. All right.
Research editor and first-time music listener, Ben Lucian.
Yeah, so first-time music today, I had a lot to go through. But after, a few minutes of listening, I was able to come up with an answer. But when I'm in my fields, which is fairly frequently, one of the artists I go to a lot is John Moreland, actually.
Yep.
And he makes constant reference to Oklahoma, but my favorite... never too much. Never too much, Greg. My favorite is Hang Me in the Tulsa County Stars.
That's a great song.
Heart-wrenching, but very beautiful song.
Good answer. What about you, Greg?
Mine is the classic Don Williams and Eric Clapton song, Tulsa Time.
Living on Tulsa Time.
And then a very close runner-up is, it's from one of my favorite bands, but it's not one of my favorite songs, but the Kinks did a really great song called Oklahoma USA on their seminally underappreciated album, Muswell Hillbillies.
All right.
So,
good answer.
Yeah.
Good deep dive.
Thank you so much. We have
Boy, did we get a lot of people on this one. Tons and tons of people said the Rodgers and Hammerstein, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bertha Sparks Goggin voted for the OSU alma mater versus Boomer Sooner, which also got quite a few votes. Home Sweet Oklahoma by Leon Russell. That great was Deborah Myers, and a lot of other people had that one. Cheryl Smith Mason said Carter Sampson's Queen of Oklahoma.
Oh, that's a great good one. Song, yeah.
Michelle Renfro had two, Oklahoma Breakdown by Stoney LaRue, and Never Been to Spain by Three Dog Night.
Always.
Always a good one. Boys from Oklahoma by Cross Canadian Ragweed. That was Lisa Krakauer had that one for us. Brian King said The Heart of Rock and Roll by Huey Lewis and the News.
Mention Oklahoma City.
Very prominently.
I didn't know anybody liked that song, though, so that's good.
Oh, I celebrate Huey Lewis's entire catalog.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, he had some good songs.
Sports was a great record.
Terry Dimmitt said Okie from Muskogee by Merle Haggard, of course. And Casey Clifford, who you already mentioned is an Oklahoma singer-songwriter who mentions Oklahoma quite a bit, said Get Your Kicks on Route 66. Heather McTernal Drennan said Flyover States by Jason Aldean.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa Coker said The Call has a song called Oklahoma, which
they're
I listened
from
to.
Oklahoma.
Yeah. And
great 80s college rock band.
Yes.
It's quite worth listening to.
Clint Stone said the Tom Waits song Swordfish Trombone apparently references Oklahoma.
All right.
Okay.
Good call, Clint.
We've also got I Ain't in Chakota Anymore by Carrie Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Cheney put that one out for us. Whitney Caster Ode to Oklahoma by Bobby Holiday. She says, every time I hear it, it makes me proud to be an Oklahoman and all the wonderful things about our great state and what we stand for as Oklahomies.
Hmm.
And then Maura Hobbs brought up Polyester by Luke Dick.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, lots of great songs, and I have an inkling that you will be hearing, literally hearing, more about these songs fairly soon in a playlist that our own editor-in-chief,
Nate, is
going to
be... Yeah, I'm
going
to put it in a playlist and write a blog about it. I will say, I have to throw out a special Christmas dispensation for Oklahoma Christmas by Blake and Reba.
Okay.
Which is very funny. It's a very good, funny Christmas song about Oklahoma that I highly recommend.
What, didn't, was Christmas in Hollis?
Oh, yeah, I forget who did that. Who was that? That
JB?
Was that's right. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe our mutual friend,
our buddy J.B. Williams,
and I believe David Dr. Pants.
That's right. They collaborated.
Was on
there
as well.
Okay.
Well, Nate and I got to sit down and talk to Kerry Watkins a little bit earlier. So let's hear some of that interview. Now we are happy to welcome in Kerry Watkins, who is the executive director of the Oklahoma City National Memorial and Museum. Kerry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me today.
This is a pretty auspicious day. The podcast comes out on April 19th, which is the anniversary, the 26th now anniversary of the Oklahoma City terrorist attack. How have things changed at the museum in the past few years?
Oh, I think it's one of our primary goals is to make sure that the museum is telling the story and meeting visitors where they are and making sure that how we reach the audiences that come to us or that we can reach them where they are using technology and trying to figure out how they're willing to consume this story. If it's through panels and artifacts or portraits or pictures, whatever it is. But as further we get away from the event, the more technology we use to teach the story to the next generation who doesn't know it and didn't live through it. And so our primary goal is to make sure we're willing to adapt to meet people where they are.
Kerry, I heard you told me something interesting, I think a couple years ago at this point, and it's that there are now more people living in Oklahoma City who were not here at the time of the bombing than were here at the time of the bombing. So how do you draw in those new local audiences who may even feel like they know the story and potentially don't and haven't yet been to the museum?
Well, that's certainly a very hard part of what we're doing and how we do it. I think we have to keep convincing people this is a place worth spending some time and learning and making sure, even if they live through it, that they know this side of the story. There's a great human side to this story of the resilience and the strength of the people, yeah. How we've moved forward 26 years. We didn't let the event, you know, really define us, but we did let how we responded to the event define us, which became known as the Oklahoma Standard. And that's acts of service, honor, and kindness, and making sure people can step up and step in when it's time to help their fellow man. And that's an important part of our story. And as you walk through this, in the horror and the hard part of it, it's horrible. People died, little kids died. And some people went to work and didn't get to come home. None of that do I take lightly. But what you can focus on is this incredible strength of the people around here and how we band together and you know, said we're not going to let this define us, and we move forward. And today, you know, I think we attempted something that, that really set a standard. We really became this city and a state on a hill that people look to after disastrous, dangerous, horrible events and say, how did Oklahoma City do it? They've seemed to have come back and done pretty well. And we did it because people from Tulsa and Mangum and Altus and Lawton, all these places came together and helped us. It's not just an Oklahoma City story. It is about the people of Oklahoma.
Yeah. And have you seen, you know, especially in the past few years as you know, we've seen increased polarization, increased anger. And have you seen a change in the way people react to the memorial and museum?
Well, I mean, you know, we're an apolitical organization, and we try very hard to remain apolitical. The country is not in peril. The country is, it's just divided. I mean, the country is just got people on both sides of the aisle, and they always have. But I do think we've got to figure out how to come and meet in the middle. We've started a program called Better Conversations that we started a year ago, bringing people to the table or to the Zoom table, Zoom wall, and having these conversations and posing some questions. We do them every Tuesday, and we're trying some different things in April. But, you know, really, it's just about bringing people together and giving you a chance to have your opinion and me a chance to have my opinion. And we may have opposite opinions, but it doesn't mean yours is any less important to you than mine is to me. And we've just got to figure out how to come to the middle and say, God, I never saw it your way, Nate, or Greg, I had no idea that was even one of the options. Let me think about that. Let me process that. And you don't have to convince me immediately. It may take me a week, a year. I don't know. Yeah. But it's good for me to be open to listening. And I think we've quit listening in this country. And we got to listen more. And we got to figure out how to hear each other, hear our kids. You know, one of the biggest things we hear from kids is my parents don't listen to me. And we got to figure out how to listen to our kids and our kids listen to their parents. I mean, that goes both ways too.
Yeah.
But listen to our coworkers, listen to our bosses, listen to the, you know, we had Krista Tippett on last week. And one thing she talked about is she goes, don't start with someone who's polar opposite of you. Start with someone who's just a little different than you. And then keep making steps, because what happens is if I go to someone who thinks radically different from me and we have a horrible conversation, I just put up a wall and just go back to my own little world. But if I talk to you about something and you're just a little different than me, you make me think, then I take another bite and go, you know, then all of a sudden I'm willing to look at someone who maybe has a completely different lifestyle or a completely different, you know, thought process than I do. And I'm willing to look at it. So for me personally, like, I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear all that. Well, maybe I need to listen to them and hear what they're saying. And then maybe they need to hear what I'm saying. Mm. And maybe sometimes we just need to turn off the television and be willing to have more conversations.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned the Better Conversations thing, because it looks like you've got a couple really cool ones coming up. You've got Dr. Gloria Griffin on the 20th of April.
Yeah.
Is the day after this podcast airs. And you have Sarah Sweet on April 27th.
Yeah. So Dr. Griffin, African-American superintendent, retired from Millwood Schools. I mean, incredible woman. I've learned so much from her. But she brings diversity to a whole new light where she looks at things that has always had to think about this. A woman in her 70s has always had to look at life, being a Black woman, being a woman, and going through the academia, you know, cycle of how she became a leader of a large school district. She's been on our board. I've worked with her a lot. Brilliant woman, sees life all around. And I love her perspective. And then Sarah Sweet lost her dad in the bombing, and former president of the Junior League. But boy, howdy, does she have a great perspective of just life and how to move forward. And I think both of those ladies will bring great perspective to the topic. And you just sign up at memorialmuseum.com and we send you a link and you jump on and you have a conversation for an hour. And it's the quickest hour you'll ever spend.
Yeah, it's one of those you can't believe it's over when it's over.
Yeah, really, it's fun. And it's not like there's any earth-shattering decisions made. It's just a conversation. Just that you get to talk to people who you may not know anyone on the screen, or you might know everyone. I don't know, but it's an opportunity for you to look at things and to listen and hear a different perspective.
Yeah.
One thing I think that always strikes me about the museum is that it is a record of what happened and I think that's a story that really needs to be told, but you're absolutely right. It's a meditative place as well. It is, it's such a great connecting place. And I love so much that the mission of the museum is not just to rehash what did happen, but really to, as a place that is supposed to help all of us continue moving forward and continue growing and not just accepting what occurred, but making peace with it and learning how to ideally make sure that nothing like this happens again.
Well, I think that's part of it, is just making it real and putting a human face to terrorism and making sure you understand those were people just like you and I talking on this Zoom. A couple of weeks ago, I was at the Dallas Federal Building with my daughter updating her passport because I'd missed a deadline. And so I drove to Dallas with her and we spent the morning in the Dallas Federal Building. And as I sat there and waited through this process, what would seem very cumbersome or even bureaucratic, it's like, I begin to look at the faces behind the people helping me. And I realize these are people like the people I talk about every day. These are people who are doing an incredible job, doing their job in the midst of an international pandemic.
Yeah.
And we're doing everything different. But these are real humans. These are not just faceless, government employees. And as we got to talk to them and know them in this 2 or 3 hour cycle of waiting and interviewing and going through the process, I'm like, oh my gosh, I needed this. And this, it was, mid-March. And I was like, I really needed this as we approach April as another reminder that we've got to make sure we continue to humanize these people. These were not faceless people. These were moms and dads and brothers and sisters and Sunday school teachers, little league coaches. They were very important people doing great work in our community. And one day, McVeigh and his cohorts decided they would change everyone's life. And so I think it's very, very important to make sure we continue to put a face on these people, which is why during the anniversary ceremony, we put their faces on the marathon route. We have photos of these people and their names on the course to make sure people continue to humanize them. We come in the museum, you see their faces several times throughout the museum so that you know in one instant these lives were gone, but these were good people doing great things, and we should never forget that.
Absolutely. I'm curious too, Carrie, for the people who maybe have been through the museum, who have visited the memorial, people who've lived here for a long time, for someone who hasn't been in a while, what might they expect to see that has changed, that's new, that might even surprise them on a return visit?
Well, on April 19th, on today, we're opening two new exhibits. One is about remembering through art, and these Broken Arrow High School students, and 168 of those students, art students, took a person who was killed and did a portrait or something through art in honor of them. It was part of the 168 day campaign we did, part of the 25th anniversary, and we never got to do this exhibit because of COVID. But it's downstairs outside their classroom in the museum. And it's a very powerful story of how kids today who had no idea who these people were took a person killed in the bombing, researched them, and did a portrait or a painting that reflects their life. It's very powerful, very, very powerful. Because
I'm actually kind of moved just hearing you describe it. I had a little tear come up in my eye.
Kids who are like teenage kids who don't have a clue, who are, in the selfish age of their life, and they spent weeks researching and then painting. I mean, you guys, it's very, very powerful.
Beautiful.
And another exhibit we open is a 2 decades of remembering and rebuilding. And it's an exhibit on how our community came together and built the memorial and museum and how, and in a way they did it through this incredible collaboration process that is very powerful. And today literally stands as a blueprint for every community, most recently Boulder, who comes to us and says, how do we do this? How do we save artifacts? How do we rebuild? How do we put a group together? Yeah. And we don't, we're not doing that to toot our own horn, but we're doing it to say, people, this is your work. This is what you did. You helped us do this. And now the world is coming to us to see how to do it. There was no place for Oklahoma City to go to. This hadn't really been done. It wasn't really a, something we were used to. And today we stand, as it come, as I said earlier, a city on a hill where people come here and they find hope here because they see that we've walked the walk and we've walked through it and we're 26 years past it. And while it is as real as it was yesterday to so many people, other people have moved here and just have had to learn about it. And other people have lived here and worked through it. But to some people, it was like it was yesterday. And so we have to figure out how to manage all those different groups and still tell the story.
That's incredible. Wow. I got to go see those exhibits.
Yeah, you got to come see them. They're really good.
One thing that really resonates with me is you know, you were kind of talking about that selfish age, you know, and
I only say that, Nate, I'm a Greg because I have two teenagers and I
completely understand. I honestly, my thought was, I feel like there's so many people who well beyond high school are still in their selfish age, and it's so nice to see. I truly love that you are helping people sort of break through their blinkers, you know, the blinders that we put on ourselves or that we allow to be put on us, and really helping people connect, because that's the thing for me that you've kind of spoken about that hits me every single day, and that is the humanization of the other, the people that aren't us, and understanding that that we are not the only ones living through this life. And so many problems really do stem from this idea that we don't see others as equal partners in this world. We don't understand that they're the same as us and have their own thoughts and feelings and fears and when we dehumanize people, that's when tragedies like the Oklahoma City bombing are allowed to occur, because all of a sudden you allow those scales to build up on your eyes in such a way that you can do horrendous things because you have stopped viewing others as equal partners in living.
I think letting these people tell their story, you know, like why they chose to paint someone, it could be really powerful, and we're capturing those thoughts. But it's one of those things that just kind of was organic, and it came. The teacher saw the daily ads in the Tulsa World, and she called and said, "Could we do this?" We're like, "Yeah, you can do it." It's a great exhibit about empathy and understanding, and it just allows us to focus, or to let people focus on the good that came from the bad. But it really is. As you walk through the gallery, I mean, you really realize how the students connected, you know, to 25 years ago, even though they weren't alive. And these portraits illustrate empathy and compassion and appreciation for the uniqueness of the individual. And that's something that honors them. And so on the eve of the anniversary, we'll have the families and survivors in the museum to see this with the kids, with the student artists, which I think will be a very powerful night. And then we'll open it to the public today. So we're very excited about that.
Carrie, just sort of a switching gears just a little bit, just into sort of a nuts and bolts kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit about any COVID restrictions or anything that people need to know before they plan to visit?
Yes, we have, and before masks were an ordinance in Oklahoma City, we required masks. We will require masks as long as CDC asks us to, because there's some tight spots and there's only one elevator up and down. I know people don't all love them, and even if you're vaccinated, it's, you know, CDC is still asking us to, especially with these new strains. So we're going to keep masks, and we have all kinds of cleanliness going on hourly in the museum. And then we ask you to social distance, and we have kind of dots on the floor that take you through the journey and kind of keep you. People have done a great job of kind of self-regulating that, but the masks are the biggest deal. And people are like, I don't want to wear a mask. I'm like, I understand, but if you want to come inside, that's the best way for you and for me and for all of us. And it's a place of respect. And so if you don't get that, you probably don't understand what this place is about to begin with.
Honestly, that's what inspired me to ask the question off of your last answer, was this idea that what the National Memorial Museum and National Memorial and Museum is so much about is about all of us doing the things, coming together to handle the tragedy. And so it's interesting to me that to the idea of visiting in this time when we are collectively experiencing a tragedy and a trauma and wondering how to respond.
Well, we're seeing gratefully our numbers go up. It was a hard year. We were closed for almost 100 days. It was tough. Like everyone in the world, I mean, everyone's gone through it, so it's not woe is me, it's just how do we get out of this together. And so we've just tried to be really careful, and you know, even outside, we're just like, if you're in big groups, just in for the ceremony today, we'll do masks, and as long as CDC thinks that's important, I'm gonna assume that there are scientists and doctors who know more than me, and that's something I think is also an important lesson to continue to teach, that I'm working on my own house. I'm not throwing stones, teaching my teenagers. There are people that are smarter than they are. And so we all go through that from about the age of 13 to 18 or 19. And maybe you guys didn't, but I'm pretty sure my parents would say I did. And anyway, I don't mean to be joking about this, but I mean, I do think it's one of those things we have to remember that, you know, the world is bigger than us, and how we collectively do things is going to be very important to how we succeed in the next few years. And not everything's going to be what I want or what you want, but hopefully you're going to win some, I'm going to win some, and we're all going to be okay in the end.
There's plenty of sunshine to go around, as my dad likes.
Now, if anybody has not been to the museum, it is at 620 North Harvey Avenue in Oklahoma City, and you guys are open 7 days a week, right?
We are, and we're open today, April 19th, for free, and we're going to stay open to the evening till 7. And then we're normally open 9 to 5 every day, and then 9 to 6 on Saturday, and noon to 6 on Sunday. And so we're open a little longer on the weekends, but people should come take a chance, and then just trust me, you'll be glad you walked in here. I mean, it'll be hard, and it does not come easy sometimes for people, but you'll be glad you did it.
Yeah, and the outdoor memorial is open pretty much all the time. And
24 hours a day, I mean, the ceremony today changes things a little bit, but for the most part, the site's open and accessible 24/7.
And if people want to watch the ceremony, that they can visit memorialmuseum.com. And also, that's a great website to visit anytime and find out about upcoming events, the conversations and questions and new exhibits that are coming in. So definitely check that out.
There's some great educational materials on there. There's virtual hope drunks, and there's a great package on there for April teaching. There's three of the strongest videos I've ever seen us do with a family member, a survivor, and a first responder. And so Donna Weaver and her son Tim tell the story of losing their dad and husband. The Arlene Blanchard, the survivor, has one of the most powerful stories I've ever seen us do on video. Then Chief Richard Kelly talks about the first responders, and I mean, they're great videos if you're a teacher, or if you're homeschooling, or if you just want to share the story with your kid for the first time. They're great ways to kind of introductory moments to teach the story, and then come down here and see the rest of it.
Awesome. And I wanted to ask you too really quickly about the Canterbury Voices event you guys have coming up on May 16th, the premiere of a piece called Of Perpetual Solace. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that is the Canterbury's kind of concert. And so they are working through that. They filmed a lot of it here, but it's a powerful message and song. And I think it's worth your time to kind of walk through that and realize that we are overcomers. We've come out of this, but how we do it is going to be very important.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to be checking that out, because that just looks amazing. So I'm excited about it. Thank you.
Yeah,
Carrie, thank you so much. I know that this is a busy day, a busy time for you, but we really do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And really, folks, I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to visit the Memorial Museum yourself. I lived in Oklahoma during the bombing. I remember the day very clearly. I remember wondering if my dad was alive. It took me a long, long time to actually go through the museum because I was scared, because I didn't want to revisit right. And it made
I relive hard things.
It made such a huge impact on me, and it's something really to share with something to experience for yourself, something to share with those that you care about. But Carrie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Carrie.
Appreciate all you do.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
All right. Once again, we have plumbed the depths of TravelOK.com to find some of the weirdest events happening across the state, and we will now attempt to make each other laugh, or at least not grimace.
Or at least go somewhere.
Yeah.
At least.
All right. Carly, what's your event this week?
It seems like an odd choice to name an event after the thing that can cause its cancellation. I mean, who wants to go to Wet Burning Man, a St. Patrick's Day parade sans beer, or Bonnaroo featuring the Kraken? Actually, maybe I'd want to go to that last one just a little bit. But hey, the organizers of Thunder and Lightning in the Wichitas are rebels. During their 3-day motorcycle rally from April 22nd to 25th, bikers can choose from 4 different rides of various lengths through the Wichita Mountains and the Medicine Park area, which are especially awe-inspiring this time of year. If you plan to go, maybe knock on wood before you head out, just in case. Call 870-389-6196 for more info.
All right. How about you, Nate?
Okay. So I love this one. This one was really fun for me because I live in a small house. It's only about 1,000 square feet. I lived there for 16 years. And so I have a lot of practice giving the tour when people come to visit for the first time. And usually, my house is so small that the tour usually goes something like this. Here, let me give you the tour. This concludes our tour. It's a very small house. So, but you know who'd be great at giving tours of my house are the folks at the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture. Except for the fact that my house isn't in Tulsa and they don't know who I am and it's not worth giving tours of. But what is in Tulsa and is worth giving tours of is a whole long weekend trip's worth of amazing architecture, much of it of the Art Deco variety. That's why you should take a TFA walking tour like the one that's going to be offered on April 22nd called Doko Momo. What does Doko Momo stand for, I hear you asking? It stands for Documentation and Conservation Modern Movement. Even though it sounds like a neighborhood in Denver, it stands for Documentation and Conservation Modern Movement, and it will explore how historic preservation is an important key to building a functional and attractive skyline like the one they have in Tulsa. I find these things cool. We got to go on a TFA walking tour one time as a group, and we had a really good time. So the tour starts at 5th in Denver in the Civic Center Plaza, and it's Thursday, April 22nd. Tickets are $15, and the tour starts at noon.
All right. Megan, what do you got for us?
The historic record has not always been known for including a variety of perspectives. Perhaps for that reason, the theme at this year's Oklahoma History Conference is Perspectives in History. On April 22nd and 23rd, audiences will attend free virtual seminars about topics ranging from indigenous exploitation and the Tulsa Race Massacre to talks about culture, inclusion, and empathy. United States Poet Laureate Joy Harjo will give the keynote address, and the Red Dirt Rangers will also perform a musical tribute to the late Oklahoma musician Steve Ripley, who passed away in 2019. For more information, please visit okhistory.org.
All right. What do you got, Ben?
All right. I'm going to need you guys to imagine with me. It's 74. It's 74 degrees as the sun sets on Maui, Hawaii's second largest island. A tropic breeze comes off the ocean, embracing you like a tender lover. The only thing more colorful than your floral Old Navy beach shirt is the bright pink lei around your neck. The luau's main draw, a golden, slowly roasted pig, is still 30 minutes from hitting your plate. But with a cold, fruity beverage in hand, you're not the least bit anxious. As the tide's steady ebb gently bobs along the sandy shore, you inhale the purest breath of air your lungs have ever known. This is paradise, you mutter to yourself. But not as all as it seems. A killer is in your midst, and they can soon strike again. Will they? What happens next? All questions to be answered not in Hawaii, but Lawton, Oklahoma, as Lawton the Interactive Theater presents its Murder in Maui live mystery show. Guests are encouraged to don their best Hawaiian attire and stay attuned for special clues throughout the show to help solve the mystery. VIP table and general admission tickets are available for the shows April 23rd through the 25th. Call 844-332-3327 or visit LawtonInteractiveStore.com.
That was like an episode of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Exactly.
That was great. I was waiting to see what was going to happen.
So our next show's in Maui, right?
Yes. By that, you mean my office.
Yeah.
I hate to bring things down. We like to have a lot of fun with our events, but I do need to get serious for a moment and talk about a medical condition that is affecting more and more Oklahomans every year. It's all fun and games till someone loses an eye, but rarely do people talk about the pernicious problem of people with loose feet. That's right. Each year, Elmore City holds the Footloose Festival, a fundraiser to address the debilitating podiatric condition in which the tendons and ligaments of the ankle slacken until feet are barely hanging on. And, oh, hold on. I just got an email from the Elmore City Chamber of Commerce, and never mind. I'm sorry. The Footloose Festival is a celebration of the 1984 Kevin Bacon film Footloose, which is itself based on a prom held in Elmore City in 1980 that ended the city's ban on dancing. So instead of a fundraiser to help people with loose feet, you can enjoy a day of crafts, food vendors, games, music, inflatables, a lawnmower race, and some kind of street dance. Will John Lithgow be there? Probably not, but you can be there on April 24th. Email eccchamber@yahoo.com for more information.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And I want to go watch that movie again now.
All right, folks, it has been a pleasure whispering sweet Oklahoma nothings into your podcast ears. We'd sure love for you to receive our magazine, so head to subscribe.oklahomatoday.com and get started on the best decision you'll make all day. If you'd like the communications to go both ways, write us at oktpod@travelok.com, and let's make this a dialogue. Other than that, we'll just plan on talking to you again next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.